Hello, and welcome to the Royal Air Force Museum podcast. Today we have a short talk by Gary Haynes, the Royal Air Force Museum archivist, on the controversy and cost of rhubarb sorties. This was originally planned to be delivered as part of the museum's Battle of Britain lectures, and Gary was planning to examine rhubarb sorties from the perspective of the Battle of Britain. However, with recent circumstances, we've had to rearrange the lecture series. Gary has kindly recorded an abridged version of his talk, in which he examines the background of rhubarbs, losses that were experienced during these sorties, and the controversy behind the sorties themselves. And Gary has been the museum's archivist since 2019, and has a lifelong interest in military history. And I think listening to Gary's talk, you'll probably be able to tell that he's really passionate about using the archives to tell stories that have been overlooked. So it's no surprise to me that he's found his way into researching the rhubarb sorties. And in the full-length version of this paper, Gary is planning to consider the policy and decisions which led to the offensive operations involved in the rhubarb sorties. However, for now, I hope you enjoy this shortened version. So here is Gary Haynes.
Many thanks. In this talk, I will be looking at rhubarb operations, their legacy which is rooted within the Battle of Britain, and the move into the offensive by fighter command. I will also investigate some of the personal stories that are connected with them. This is a shortened version of my full lecture in which I plan to discuss in depth the concept of RAF offensive operations after the Battle of Britain, the controversial cost of them, and to highlight in many respects the forgotten rhubarb operations from 1940 to 44. I hope to give this full lecture at the RAF Museum in the near future, accompanied by images from our archive and photographic collections. I began as the archivist for the RAF Museum in September 2019, and in the first week, Nina Hedaway, the Archive, Library and Research Manager, gave me a tour of the store, and of course I was curious to see what was in those lovely acid-free boxes. One of the items that Nina showed me would go on to spark a blog, this talk, and lots of ongoing research. The archive item was Douglas Bader's logbook. Within the pages of this book was an entry that caught my eye when we went through the pages. This was written in pencil by Bader, underlined for emphasis, and, reflecting RAF slang of the time, it read simply, "McKnight killed Strafing Huns," and was dated the 12th of January 1941. Research later made me discover that by the 12th of January 1941, Flying Officer McKnight, part of Bader's No. 242 Squadron, had achieved a total of 17 confirmed victories, 2 shared destroyed and 3 unconfirmed destroyed, this marking him firmly as an ace. The full results of this research can be found on my blog post for the RAF Museum, entitled Posts from the Archive, Bader's Logbook. One aspect of my blog research intrigued me. McKnight was killed while undertaking a rhubarb operation. In fact, subsequent research would show that he was the first casualty on a rhubarb. The first question I had to therefore ask myself was, what was a rhubarb? Being of a certain age, the first thing that came to my mind was a rather colourful animated dog and a catchy theme tune. Rhubarbs were in fact defined as Royal Air Force patrols over territory occupied by the enemy, to be made by single fighters or formations up to a flight in strength under specific weather conditions. The primary purpose of these operations were to attack enemy aircraft in flight. But if no enemy aircraft were seen in flight, pilots might, in favourable circumstances, attack suitable ground objectives. These are defined as being German military objectives. Rhubarbs were originally called mosquito operations, but the name was soon changed due to confusion with the aircraft of that name. It is clear in this definition, rhubarbs were designed from the outset as aggressive offensive operations to ensure that the Luftwaffe cannot fly over their own territory without being concerned over interceptions, and also troop movements could be hindered. It is to be remembered that after Dunkirk, that the only way the offensive could be taken to Germany was via the Royal Air Force. The Battle of Britain, of which we mark the 80th anniversary year this year, was a defensive operation. The concept of rhubarbs was to place the Royal Air Force at the heart of the offence against Germany and the territories that it had captured. Rhubarb operations tend to get lost in the research that has been undertaken on circus operations, which are more widely known, and also part of the plan to take the offensive to the enemy. Circuses were designed to flush out the Luftwaffe by using squadrons of fighters to cover a small leading force of bombers over occupied territory, which would act as bait, if you will, for the Luftwaffe to attack. Much has been written about circuses, but surprisingly not a lot regarding rhubarbs. In the operations record book for December 1940, one patrol is noted in the marginalia in pencil as First Rhubarb. described officially as taking off under operations orders. This took place on the 20th of December 1940, a day before the instructions of Rhubarbs were officially issued. Two Spitfires of number 66 Squadron, piloted by Flight Lieutenant Christie and a pilot officer Bodie, took off from Biggin Hill and flew across the channel. The weather is described as continuous rain and drizzle, middle period of day with fog. Visibility is described as poor to very poor. This was ironically ideal flying conditions for Rhubarbs. The logic being that Luftwaffe fighters would not be flying in this weather, allowing the Royal Air Force more freedom over the skies of occupied territory. Of course, what this meant in reality was that Royal Air Force pilots would be going up and flying in conditions that were far from ideal for them also. Poor weather conditions also did not affect flak defences, which we will be discussing later. It is reported that on the first Rhubarb, Christie and Bodie flew across to Dieppe, turned inland, were fired at and returned fire. On their way back, Bodie also opened fire on some buildings. These were buildings on the French seafront. This raised official concern over what was legitimate targets for Rhubarbs. On the 22nd of August 1939, Fighter Command received a paper entitled Air Ministry Instructions and Notes on the Rules to be Observed by the Royal Air Force in War. This was circulated widely. As stated in the Air Historical Branch's narrative on this period, shortly after the outbreak of war, it was considered desirable to inform those concerned that a clause in the instructions with authorised attacks on air units, military aerodromes, depots, storage units, bomb stores and other establishments manned by air personnel must be freely interpreted in regard to attacks on objectives in the vicinity of the land battle. On the 4th of June 1940, new instructions were issued which Fighter Command received on the 5th of June, and the categories which could be attacked were enlarged. Reflecting the ever-changing dynamic battlefield at this time, in July 1940 it was decided that any military objectives in France and other countries under enemy occupation could be legitimately bombarded. However, this was strictly to be based on intelligence that the military establishments were known to be occupied by enemy forces and moving trains must not be attacked. Of course, this was not much help in regards to guidance when flying on Rhubarbs away from land battles on the offensive. What could a pilot legitimately target? There were issues raised by this first Rhubarb. It was also discovered that the latter instructions of June 1940 and its amendments had not passed beyond command headquarters. As the Air Historical Branch's narrative states, this was an understandable admission since the command had been little concerned with offensive action up to this time. By January 1941, new instructions had been issued to Fighter Command, which spelled out more precisely what objectives could be attacked in German-occupied countries. These were enemy military forces, including naval auxiliaries, troop transports and military supply ships, could be attacked in any circumstances which did not infringe the Red Cross conventions or involve disproportionate risk to civilians. Military works, fortifications, aerodromes, whether military or civil, and stores and dumps of military stores could also be attacked on these terms. Military establishments and depots, including barracks, camps, billets and naval dockyards, could be specifically selected for attack only if they were known to be in use or occupied by German or Italian forces. Shipyards, factories and other establishments engaged in the manufacture, assembly or repair of military material, equipment or supplies, as well as power stations, fuel and oil producing plants, refineries and storage installations, could be attacked, but not if attacking them involved the intentional bombardment of civilian populations or undue risk to civilians. They should also be known to be working for the German or Italian forces. Lines of communication and transportation and means of intercommunication serving military purposes could be attacked if attacking them did not involve the intentional bombardment of civilian populations or risk to civilians. But attacks on moving trains and on merchant ships were specifically forbidden. Trains did become regarded as a legitimate target in October 1941. Although these clearly dealt with identifying ground targets, the official view was still that Rhubarb should be against enemy aircraft in flight. Attacks on ground targets were secondary. This was certainly the view of Air Chief Marshal Sholto Douglas. In a dispatch written to the Secretary of State for Air on the 1st of February 1948, Douglas recalls that he had considered it important that the primary object of the operation, namely the destruction of enemy aircraft, should not be forgotten, and discouraged any tendency to give undue emphasis to the attacks on ground objectives. This seems to be at odds with the situation in which the pilot found themselves, flying over the channel, flying over occupied territory, and flying back again, without being able to target any enemy installations if no aircraft was seen. It also sits odd with Douglas's other expressed view in regards to flying over enemy-held territory. In part two of his biography, titled Years of Command, he states that, since the whole of our thinking in the Royal Air Force has always been that offence was the best form of defence, the work of fighter command in the defence of this country after the battle was not confined merely to the waging of the night battle against the German bombers and waiting for an invasion. After the Battle of Britain, we had immediately started making plans for a change in the use that was to be made of the day fighters, and by the time that I arrived at fighter command, they were already about to go onto the offensive and to be given a chance to hit back at the Germans over their own territory in occupied France. He goes on to link this thinking with Viscount Hugh Trenchard, the father of the Royal Air Force, as it was reported to Douglas that Trenchard had suggested that fighter command should go on the offensive to, in Trenchard's words, lean towards France. By this time, Trenchard was unofficially visiting RAF units. Trenchard was certainly an advocate of aggressive tactics and believed in taking the fight to the enemy, as he had done when in command of the Royal Flying Corps in France in the First World War, causing some controversy over losses. Controversies that would echo down years later and attach themselves to Douglas and Rhubarb's. Douglas, in his biography, writes that he still had doubts over the idea, and that, at the back of my mind when I got to fight command, was the thought that we would have to exercise some caution in sending our fighters over occupied France, and not just go belting over there looking for trouble. Arguably, this is exactly what the Rhubarb's initially did, but possibly explains why Douglas was so keen to emphasise that the pilots should engage enemy aircraft, not ground targets. Shooting up of some seaside French houses too on the first Rhubarb also perhaps made him wish to emphasise this later on. Many view Rhubarb operations, to quote an entry in an operations record book, as a ruddy waste of time. Douglas's dispatch gives some clue as to why these operations could be seen as a waste of aircraft and even more importantly experienced pilots, many veterans of the Battle of Britain. He states that between 20th of December 1940 and 13th of June 1941, 149 Rhubarb patrols involving 336 sorties were flown, of which 45 were rendered abortive by unsuitable weather or other circumstances. German aircraft were seen in the air on 26 occasions, to a total of 77 aircraft, and on 18 occasions were engaged. The destruction of 7 enemy aircraft was claimed for the loss of 8 of our pilots, and 116 separate attacks were made on a variety of surface objectives, including ships, road vehicles, airfield buildings, grounded aircraft, artillery, searchlight posts, German troops and military camps. This, putting it crudely, seems to say 8-7 to the Royal Air Force. Not a good score when one considers the experience of the men as well. Of course, as it can be seen here, ground targets become the prime motivation for the Rhubarb operations, much of the planning of these actually being undertaken by squadron intelligence officers and the pilots themselves. Another issue with Rhubarbs was the same as faced by the Luftwaffe in 1940. The aircraft would be at the limit of their range, and if you were shot down and the airmen survived, it is likely you would become a prisoner of war. By researching the excellent source of Norman Franks's Fighter Command losses volumes, a story emerges of the cost in terms of the men on these Rhubarb operations. Undertaking a complete survey of the 3 volumes of the Fighter Command Losses book, I was able to identify 285 incidents which resulted in damage to aircraft or loss of aircraft and pilot while undertaking Rhubarbs. The majority of these involved losses of pilots, with some 154 killed on Rhubarb operations. Also, contrary to assumed knowledge, Rhubarb operation continued to be flown for most of the war until at least 6th of August 1944, when the last Rhubarb loss was recorded. A flight lieutenant Gurr had his engine fail in his Typhoon after being hit by flak after attacking motorised transport and was forced to land behind American lines, although perhaps the term was being applied slightly more loosely by this point. Some 50 pilots were also captured and become prisoners of war, although 12 did evade. Among those who become prisoners of war were pilot officer Schiedheyer. He was shot down in November 1942 by flak, imprisoned, and who escaped Stalag Luft 3 on the 24th of March 1944, but was recaptured and, along with 49 others, executed. Among the 154 killed on Rhubarbs were two wing commanders and 11 squadron leaders. 13 pilots who held the DFC were killed and three become POWs. Examining some of these men in more detail gives us a snapshot into the cost of Rhubarbs. I will be undertaking a more fuller examination of the rest of these men in future research. One of the first things that strikes you when investigating individual operations is the loss felt and occasionally the bitterness expressed that an experienced pilot has been killed on a Rhubarb operation. This is clearly seen when looking at the loss of Flight Sergeant Eric Locke, DFC DSO, of 611 Squadron, who was killed on the 3rd of August 1941. The operations record book records the following. Slightly cloudy morning turned into lovely sunny afternoon. Six pairs of the squadron indulged in rhubarbs, one in the morning and five pairs in the afternoon. But there was insufficient cloud over France, so everyone come back, except Lockie, who went in with Flight Lieutenant Cathals of 403 Squadron. It then goes on to record that Locke was last seen streaking down a road at the back of Boulogne, brassing off soldiers on bicycles, and I quote, whooping over the radio transmission, ha ha, look at the bastards running. It seems an already awful waste to lose so great a pilot on so trivial an expedition. The use of the words indulged and trivial give a clue as to how the officer writing up this operations record book felt about rhubarb operations. Although it is to be pointed out, the six pilots who took part in rhubarbs on this day, there was just one loss. The squadron would take part in three rhubarb operations in August involving 11 pilots. Most of their duties being flying bomber escorts, fighter sweeps and convoy patrols. In this month, they recorded three additional losses of men on these duties. Rhubarb operations were comparatively rare compared to other duties, purely because they depended on set weather conditions. The operations record book for 611 Squadron also offers us a glimpse into how squadrons had to move on quickly from such a loss. The following day, it is reported, Air Vice Marshal Lee Mallory paid us a visit and stayed to dinner. A good time was had by all, the station orchestra putting on a very good show, and the Canadians of 403 Squadron, who replaced 54 Squadron, were also amusing. The description in the operations record book of Locke's whooping is of course a reminder that these pilots were young men full of adrenaline and bravado. When Flight Sergeant Locke was killed, he was 22. However, this is not to underestimate the experience lost by his death on a rhubarb. Locke was one of the most successful of Battle of Britain pilots, and by the time of his death had 21 victories, 16 of those in the Battle of Britain itself. One can therefore imagine his frustration flying rhubarbs and having difficulty finding targets, which may explain his actions. Wing Commander Brendan Eamon Finnegan of 154 Squadron was another highly experienced decorated pilot with a DSO and a DFC. On the 15th of July 1942, the Wing Commander briefed 30 pilots regarding an attack on a hutted camp in northern France that was to be targeted. During the subsequent rhubarb operation, his aircraft was hit by ground fire and he ditched into the English Channel and sunk with his aircraft. Finnegan, nicknamed Paddy due to his Irish roots, had a wealth of experience and skill. He had been posted to No. 65 Squadron based at Hornchurch just before the start of the Battle of Britain, and he played a leading role in the defence of the country. In May 1941, his DFC citation read, "This officer has shown great keenness in his efforts to engage the enemy, and he has destroyed at least five of their aircraft. His courage and enthusiasm have been a source of encouragement to other pilots of the squadron." By September 1941, Finnegan had been awarded two more DFCs in October 1941, a DSO, the citation of which read, "Recently, during two sorties and consecutive days, Flight Lieutenant Finnegan destroyed five Messerschmitt 109s, bringing his total victories to at least 20. The squadron has destroyed 42 enemy aircraft, of which Flight Lieutenant Finnegan has personally destroyed 15. The successes achieved are undoubtedly due to this officer's brilliant leadership and example." Finnegan's aircraft was painted with a shamrock emblem near its cockpit. A member of his ground crew decided to add to this and painted a circle of swastikas on the aircraft to show his victories. Finnegan, in an act which says much about the character of the man, asked for them to be removed, as he felt it was wrong to boast about his actions that must have resulted in the death of young men. Finnegan was himself only 21 when he was killed. He was so respected that on his death a mass was said in Westminster Cathedral and 3,000 people attended. A subsequent appeal raised money in his name for a Funeral ward in Richmond Royal Hospital. Another story came to light when researching Flying Officer O.B. James, one of determination. The Operations Record Book of 245 Squadron writes of the events of the 4th of October 1943. The day's operations were marred by the failure of the squadron's popular one-hand pilot, Flying Officer O.B. James, MMDFM, and his number 2, Flight Sergeant J.D. Flynn, to return from a long-range rhubarb. They were airborne at 16:35 hours, intending attacking enemy aircraft in the area west of Paris. Nothing more was heard of them. At 17:20, our wire service picked up a Hun interception on their course, which claimed 2 destroyed, so it looks like our machines. James was such a loss to the squadron that the officer who wrote the entry detailed James's life below it. Flying Officer James was an ex-sergeant pilot and bomber command who carried out numerous sorties in Hamdens over Berlin, Cologne, Bremen, and all the famous German targets. He was shot down in March 1941 while attacking Brest and sustained an injury to his left hand, which could have normally been fixed, but the German doctors, who had a lot on their hands at the time, apparently decided to amputate. Later, James succeeded in escaping and returning to operational flying in single-seater fighters. He was a remarkably keen and very capable pilot. The diary then recalls that successful rhubarbs had been flown, which included firing at 3 trains, a blockhouse, a signal box, and scattering about 100 Huns, as they called them, in a field, also damaging a locomotive in the siding. Later, 2 trains and trucks were shot up on another rhubarb, and a storehouse caught fire and blazed furiously. There is no bitterness towards rhubarbs in this report. These are just a selection of some of the 285 stories I could actually tell. There was one more fact that stood out when researching rhubarb operational losses. One enemy that would be continuous and lethal to all pilots flying rhubarbs. Pierre Klosterman, writing in The Big Show, expresses fear of a weapon that would be the biggest enemy of pilots taking part in rhubarb operations. We were at 40,000 feet and kept straight on over to the left as if we had no intention of attacking. I took a close look at the field. The small dark crosses parked just where we had expected him showed up on the bright grass of early spring. I particularly noticed 1, 2, 4, 7 flak towers. Their shadows clearly projected on the perimeter tracked by the sun. Look out, film star leader, flak at 6 o'clock. Sure enough, 200 yards behind us, 5 big black puffs from 88mm shells had appeared. Okay, 5 more seconds and then I would attack. The objective was behind us and we were facing the sun. Fear caught me by the throat and stopped me breathing. Aerial combat against fighters had always found me calm after the early stages, but flak was quite different. Klosterman flew over 420 operational sorties, but he was literally gripped by fear regarding flak, as he recalls vividly. What flak? Physical fear is the most terrible thing man can suffer. My heart leapt to my mouth. I was covered with sweat, with sticky, clammy sweat. My clenched toes swam in my boots. Flak shot down 62 aircraft on rhubarb operations in which the pilots were recorded as killed. The greatest enemy was not enemy fighters, but flak. In the total of the 285 recorded operational losses relating to rhubarbs, 130 were attributed to flak. Only 29 were attributed to encounters with enemy aircraft. It is, of course, easy to dismiss rhubarbs as a waste of aircraft and highly experienced men for little gain. However, this was an offensive operation, and losses are sadly part of routine when attacking the enemy, literally bringing the fight to them. And, of course, it was the experienced veterans who would be at the forefront, as it was their way. As the Air Historical Branch's narrative comments when focusing on the 40-41 period, the threat of low-level air attack cannot have been without its effect on the morale of Luftwaffe personnel on the ground, and must have modified the enemy's attitude to such questions as the manning of ground defences. This, perhaps, can explain the high-level operational losses lost to flak. Command experience was also gained via rhubarb operations, again quoting the Air Historical Branch's narrative. There can be no doubt that the experience gained by pilots, intelligence officers, and the staffs of lower formations generally in the planning and execution of these patrols was of great immediate and still greater potential value. Although this was not always apparent at the time, it is easy to see now how valuable a training ground this operation was for many who would one day share in supporting the operations of an armed force on the continent. Rhubarbs were the first step in taking the fight to the enemy, spearheaded by the Royal Air Force. The operations and the men involved in them deserve to be more well known and their achievements recognised. Thank you.